Charles. Okay. Well, happy New Year, everybody. It's Eddie. Glad you're with us. Hope you had a terrific holiday, as we did, and got caught up on some things. So we are glad you're back. We have got Mr. Mangan with us. Charles, you there? Nine.
Okay, I have no volume.
Oh, we hear
you. Got volume now. You got volume now, my man.
Hold on a minute, guys.
You got
Y'all
volume?
Hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Oh.
Charles, we got volume. We can hear you.
Something's not working.
All right. You text him, Matt. I'll let him know.
All right, I'll do that.
All right. So, got Matt with us. Actually, Matt is in his hometown of Hattiesburg, Mississippi tonight. So he is working from the Shoemake office. Let's see, Matt, I'll catch Charles. All right, Charles, can you hear us now?
Take that as a no.
I got him.
Gotcha.
All right, Matt. Well, just for a little bit of fun, let's talk about what we did for the last couple of weeks. So, for those of you that haven't heard, my son Hudson played in the state championship game. They lost a heartbreaker by 2 points. I guess they're the
Good
second place.
Evening.
Hey, Charles.
What's wrong with my computer? Antoine hooked up a new computer this weekend, and I have no volume.
Yeah. Actually, we could hear you.
Oh, could you?
But you couldn't hear us, so that's okay.
I couldn't
yeah.
hear you. Okay.
You dialed in on the phone, so yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I just dialed in on the phone.
So anyway, that was a heartbreaker. Then we went to Denver. Matt, you got some pictures of Emily there real quick. Just have a little fun. So that was Emily. Emily was the basically the principal role in the Nutcracker for Colorado Ballet for let's see, Matt.
Clara from the Nutcracker.
Clara, and she was that for 14 performances.
I think she did 11 this time.
Okay, it was a lot.
Yeah.
So
they had 26 right. performances, and she did it for 11 of them.
Awesome. All right, we'll scroll down a little bit. So there's old Emily flying through the air with a Nutcracker in her hand. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I tell people she's definitely the most athletic one in our family. And backstage, so we got the whole clan there. And Wood, my mother-in-law, Betty Riley, who actually Charles manages a portfolio for, Martha, myself, Emily, Matt, and there's old Hudson there on the far right. So, anyway, a little family fun there. All right, Mr. Matt, we got a good bit of content to get through tonight, so let's roll with it.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and pull Roman in and get him unmuted. Roman, if you are good to go, you can go ahead and start talking.
I'm good to go.
Hello, Roman.
How are you, Mr. Speed?
It's all good, my man. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
All right, so what do you got?
Been beating the bushes at the local RIA for guys who flip and create their own notes by doing seller financing. Had a meeting with this gentleman who created this note. It's kind of unique and kind of different way of structuring a deal, but it's a 5-year term. It was originated in last year. First payment was made in June of 14 at $600 a month. So it's not an amortized loan. Sale price on this was $44,400. The really weird thing about this particular house is I sold it as an REO back in 08, and now it's on a second owner or third owner at this point. But the first 12 months were $600. Then in on June 1st of 15, it went up to $700. And now, and then come this year on June 1st, it goes up to $800 for the last 36 months. So if you add all those numbers up together, it comes to a sale price of $44.4.
Okay, when you say it's not an amortizing loan, what you mean to say is it's written at zero interest?
Yes.
Okay. So it's amortizing, it's just it doesn't have any interest attached to it.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
So I'm trying to, I mean, since it's not structured the way we usually see notes structured with a set monthly price or a set monthly payment, taking into consideration everything, how do you evaluate this note? What's it worth?
Well, I think, Charles, we go back to the principles that we teach. I mean, there's six characteristics that influence the value of a note. The buyer, the collateral, the equity, the terms of the note, and the terms of the note is what you focused on so far. Fifth characteristic is the pay history, and the sixth characteristic is how it's papered. So let's just kind of click down through the list. I'm assuming that they don't know anything about the buyer except that he bought a house and they owner financed it, right?
Correct.
All right, so let me ask you a question. They financed this in June of 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they a dealer?
No.
I mean, you're certain that they haven't sold and financed at least three houses this year in any multiple amount of entities.
In 14?
Dodd-Frank became relevant January 10th of 2014.
Right. This particular investor owns three different corporations.
You see, that's a fallacy. It's any combination of entities.
Right. I would
owned by the same investor.
I gotta double check. I would bet he's done more than three in 14.
Then he ain't compliant. He's got a worthless note, in our opinion.
Are these on a note mortgage, Roman?
Land contract.
Land contracts, okay. Okay.
Now, that didn't make Dodd-Frank go away. You realize that, right?
Right.
All right, so the first thing I would say is you got to make sure you got a piece of paper you can buy, okay? If the guys don't create owner finance notes and he's not compliant, I'm just saying, you know, the ultimate at the end of the day, the borrower could, if they are paying on a loan that's not compliant with Dodd-Frank, they could demand all the money that they've paid back and say, forgive the debt. And there wouldn't be anything you could do about it. Now, people say, well, how often does that happen? It doesn't matter, right, Charles?
No. Whether it's one in a million, it could happen. You got to look at the fact that it could happen, and it could happen to you. You definitely could be the statistic here.
All right. So the first thing I'm going to say is compliance. Is it are they not subject to Dodd-Frank? If they financed in a 12-month period, three or less, they're okay. Four or more, okay. Number two is redeeming factors, okay? So I'm going to bet they don't really know much about the payer, right? The payer is – go ahead.
This is all – I don't have firsthand information on it, no. We did this in a sit-down meeting on the 23rd of December, and, you know, and then everything went to my holidays, so – this has been something I've been working on for the last couple of days.
Okay, my point is, when they made the loan to this buyer, they didn't really vet the buyer. Right. They didn't verify their income. They didn't pull credit. They didn't verify other, you know, previous rent history or mortgage history. I mean, my gamble here is they did the old rehab or shut your eyes and we're going to owner finance you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you got no redeeming factor there. Okay? The redeeming factor, quite honestly, is pay history. They paid for a year and a half, and you got something to work with. If you paid bone cash for this house, what would you pay for it today?
Thing is, I still have my interior photos from 08, so I know the house layout. Knowing this investor, I know he also blows them out, so he's probably updated mechanical systems. But upstairs is tangent. This is realistically 50, 52.
52,000?
Yeah.
In Cleveland?
Yeah, because of the size.
Huh. That's that. Usually that when you see a rent of 750 in Cleveland, the cash value is way lower than that. All right, so here's the bottom line. You just run a mathematical calculation to figure out what the note is worth. It's a short-term note, so I would buy it at a higher yield than normal if I were buying it, okay? Mm-hmm. Because you don't get to earn the money for very long, right? It's different than earning the yield for 3 years than earning the yield for 18 years. So in that scenario, I would – price it that way. So number one, if they're not compliant, our company policy is we just don't price it. You can buy a loan that's not compliant. Just got to take the gamble. They're not gonna kick back. Okay. Secondly, you got an 18-month pay history, and I would trust but verify it's a real pay history, right? Bank statements. I mean, like no Walmart receipt books. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know the old Walmart receipt book, right? You ask somebody for pay history, and they go to Walmart and fill out a receipt book. And it's like when I used a little kid in elementary school, my teacher would make me write sentences for talking in class. I will not talk in class. And I'd write, I will.
You, Mr. Speed, you?
Oh, it happened. It happened.
It's hard to believe.
So like that, you look down, the eye would be going like this, and the will. Yeah, no Walmart receipt books on the pay history. So other than that, what's the note worth? My gut is it's probably worth, because it's zero interest, it's probably going to be worth about 60 cents on the dollar. So. You didn't hold a gun to this guy's head and make him carry a loan at zero interest, did you?
He spoke very highly of this buyer, supposedly.
Oh, hell yeah, he spoke highly. Have you ever heard him speak lowly about him, Charles? He tried to sell you the note. This guy owes the money. Hell yeah, he's going to speak good about him.
Well, I got another note that he does I'm going to submit for next week's call, because that one's lots of fun.
All right, well, So the bottom line is, there's your checklist. If it's compliant, then you back into the pricing model, okay? And, mm-hmm. and it's all a matter of just honestly, it's just weighing redeeming factors. And I'm sort of going down through the checklist.
Okay.
That's a beautiful question for tonight's call, by the way. I mean, it's exactly what we're trying to do, is to like bring up, you know, just right where the rubber meets the road of, you know, people asking questions. Why does it work, you know?
Well, and that's what I'm finding with a lot of these rehabbers that are doing the seller financing, that a lot of it is structured like this. It's not Dodd-Frank compliant. It's just, here, let's throw something up against the wall and have somebody sign it.
Why do you think I'm trying to get the law changed?
Yeah.
Because these guys, the average rehabber that does owner financing is very sophisticated in identifying value and selling a house to a consumer, okay, as far as finding a buyer and having a quick turn deal. When it comes to the paper that they originate, I'm just telling you, Roman, after doing this for 35 years, they suck at it. They all suck at it. The only way they're not going to suck at it is they've sold loans in the past and they've gotten beaten in the head by the price because they created the wrong note. Ain't no other way to do it. It's not by accident they're going to create a good note. They will underwrite a tenant five times better than they underwrite a payer on the note. Ask me why? I don't know. I've been doing it 35 years. I still ain't figured it out. So,
all right.
That's what we got.
Thank you.
All right, brother.
Take care.
All right, Mr. Matt, what we got, bud?
Got a few questions on the board if you want to hit those up. I don't know if you've seen those or not. Got someone wanting a little bit of clarification, Jeff Geis. He was asking, was it not compliant because the loan was originated and the terms? I don't know if that got answered with the date component to that. So,
all right. So, Jeff, Dodd-Frank, who was these two basically idiot politicians that decided they were going to protect America and not ever let predatory lending happen again. So they wrote these laws, and under the law, they said if you owner finance more than three transactions in a 12-month period, that you're treated just like Bank America. If you're owner finance property, you're subject to Dodd-Frank. When you're subject to Dodd-Frank, you got to have a loan officer's license. Typically in most states, that is referred to as a residential mortgage loan originator, RMLO. And without that mortgage originator's license on the documents, their number stamped on the documents, it ain't compliant. And it's like being pregnant or not being pregnant. Ain't no halfway to it, baby. And so these rehabbers go out and owner finance property, and they create documents that are not compliant with Dodd-Frank, and then they try to sell them to us. The problem is, if I buy that loan and the borrower wakes up down the road somewhere and decides he wants all his money back, what's the law tell me I got to do, Charles?
You got to give it back.
So
it could be a costly gamble. Or costly investment.
And we all have a high vested interest in getting the law changed, and we are, you know, that law is that Seller Finance Regulation Reduction Act law that we talked about at the Note Expo. That law is coming out here in the next really couple of weeks. So we need everybody's work and support to do it. We don't think that a real estate investor should be held to the same standard as Bank of America. We agree with that, but it doesn't matter. And so these real estate investors who I'm an equal opportunity offender. I'm just like Saturday Night Live, okay? But I'm just telling you, I've dealt with thousands of them over my career, and most of them are very unsophisticated when it comes to financing. And you know, they're like, well, I didn't know. Well, it really doesn't matter if you knew there was a traffic light there or not. If you run it, you get a ticket. And that's how it works. So there's no point in wasting a bunch of time if the guy is a dealer. Now, remember, he has to do so many transactions in a year. That says more than three to have dealer status. What else, Matt?
Could you explain, John's asking this, John Rudman is asking what you mean by backing into pricing?
It's run a yield, cash flow at a yield. This one's a little bit more complicated because it has various different payment amounts, but that's basically what you do. And to be honest with you, you know, because it's such a short term, you won't see a huge discount difference if you price it at a 15 yield versus an 18 yield. I mean, it'll be like, you agree, Charles, it'll be less than 5% difference.
Yeah.
If it were a long-term note, 20 or 30 years, that would be a completely different variable.
So. Yeah, this is a little bit harder because the payments change every year for the 3 years, which is more than half of the term.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Matt, what's up? What's next?
All right, so Dave has a question. I've got him unmuted.
Hi, Eddie. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Doing wonderful. One of the notes that I'm brokering out, and I discussed this with Mahmood over the holiday, the particular commercial buyer always does a interview of the note payer. And in this particular note, it's got seasoning of 16 months, so it's and there's a pay history. They've got bank statements on every payment. They eventually waive this, but on every note, they always require a note payer interview. And I'd just like to get some feedback from you in terms of when that's viable, when it's not, because obviously when Colonial is selling notes, and they've got a lot more seasoning, of course, there's never that facet there, so maybe you could just kind of walk me through that process. In this case, the payer was Hispanic and freaked out about somebody calling them and knowing that their note was going to be sold, and they thought it was going to change all the terms, so you've got all those running dynamics. And I thought this particular interview here, interview form, which came from this note buyer, was kind of long. I guess I'd just like some input from you.
Okay. The company that Charles used to work for, the Associates, and Metropolitan, who Bob used to work for, initially did payer interviews when they were buying individual seller finance notes. Okay, this wasn't necessarily a portfolio of notes. It was just one individual with one note. We did it my whole career. So when we're buying one-off notes from individuals, we would call the payer and do a payer interview. Okay, doing that payer interview is a skill set. Okay, so if you've got some nerdy, you know, underwriter type person that needs to go to Walmart and get a personality, they're going to suck at doing this interview. I'm just telling you.
Okay.
And so, you know, the questions they ask, you know, and that type of thing. So whoever is doing that process, they didn't invent that idea. They're just copying what's been done in the industry since I started in 1980.
Okay.
So I can tell you that you're selling it to two or three different people, all of which I know, and I guarantee you none of them invented that idea.
I'm sure they didn't.
Okay. So we did it for years. Now, do we do it in portfolios? No. But we did it on individual notes. And I'd say, Charles, if you were buying a portfolio for my mother-in-law, a loan for my mother-in-law tonight, and it was just one individual note, you'd go back to the old payer interview, wouldn't you?
I would. It probably wouldn't be as lengthy as the one you were just showing us, Dave. But, I mean, we would, yeah, I'd definitely do just, you know, go through an interview and ask some questions. You know, a lot of it's just stuff that would be on the application, too. So maybe there's not applications in these files. But I think some of those questions look like
part of the application. Let me tell you what jumped off the page at me. What jumped off the page at me is when you started focusing on it being a partial. Okay? As far as the payer is concerned, the note's being sold. Partial ain't no part of the conversation, ever.
Okay? I'm just giving you the background on it, but I understand.
I know, but I don't want the payer to start hearing partial.
Agreed. I get that. Okay.
Okay? They are. That note is being sold, and the servicing is being transferred until further notice. Period.
Okay. Okay.
So the partial is not something I want to get into with the payer at all. Okay.
Okay.
The buyer being concerned about somebody changing the terms of his note tells me the person interviewing did not do a good job of saying, we cannot change the terms of your note. We just want to make sure you're happy with the deal you've got and you can afford it. Okay? That's how it should have been said.
Okay.
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 So, I mean, if you want to go back and look at the questions and talk about, I mean, I know you sent the form in. I mean, I'm happy to do that, but I'm just saying, yeah, you know, it's been an industry standard. The reason you guys don't ever hear talk about it, because we normally are buying and selling a portfolio of notes, and it's not something that we've done with a portfolio. You say, well, why is a portfolio different than an individual note? Because we can underwrite the seller better than we can with an individual note. I know you find this shocking, but this ain't my first rodeo to have some 85-year-old lady totally put the britches on me and lie to me about the fact that she knows that they've already handed the keys to her and they've already walked out of the house. If I got a guy that I'm buying $1 million worth of notes from, I've got more teeth in the buy-sell agreement that I can go back on them and do something about it. So the reason we do the payer interview is because we don't know whether we can believe the guy selling the note or not.
So in the case of this note or any note, and I'm dealing in one-offs for the most part right now, if I can't get a hold of the payer for an interview, is that a deal killer?
You're not going to get a hold of them. If we're buying it, you're not going to get a hold of them. We're going to get a hold of them.
Well, I understand that. But if you can't, if you're buying it from me and you can't get a hold of the payer, is that a deal killer?
You know, here's what I would say. You got to look at the whole deal and see if it adds up.
Okay.
And when you say you can't get a hold of them, Mangan, how many times have we not gotten a hold of a payer on a loan that's living in the house and been able to talk to them?
Well, we can generally get a hold of a payer.
1 in 50 times we can't get a hold of them. 49 of those times we can get a hold of them.
Now, if you get a payer, but you will have payers like this one here that, you know, they were uncomfortable with the questions and they hung up the phone. They
right.
may not.
The problem is
you don't
your note buyer, the person you're trying to broker the note to probably screwed this up.
That wouldn't surprise me in this particular situation after having dealt with them for several notes now.
I told you I've dealt with all these people in the market.
I know. I get it.
This ain't my first experience. Sometimes all that glitters ain't gold. Let's go back to the issue. So Charles, you're buying a note, a one-off note. So he goes out and does direct mail. He negotiates the sale. He's got one guy that has one note. He's trying to sell you, and you're going to put it in Shoemake portfolio, right?
Right.
You know our standard operating procedure is we want to do a payer interview. But you get on the phone, and they get weird, or, you know, they can't speak the language that you speak very well, or whatever it is. We're not even sure what language you speak, by the way, but that's a whole other issue.
That's right.
So the deal is, would you fund it? And the answer is, let's talk about under what conditions would you waive the payer interview? What other circumstances would you want to see?
Well, first of all, I'm going to look at the pay history. Am I comfortable with that pay history? You know, is it a like Eddie said, a receipt book? I'm not comfortable with that, you know. But if there's bank statements showing me that they've made consistent payments, or there's copies of canceled checks or a check, then, yeah, you know, there's certain circumstances I would waive the payer interview. Also, you know, do they have some type of loan application that the borrower filled out that would provide information on it that I could, you know, pull a credit bureau if I wanted to pull a credit bureau? You know, so how much information did the borrower provide up front? So there is some redeeming factors that would prevent me from doing a payer interview.
Okay.
Like, let me ask you a question. The house is worth what?
House is worth 75.
And you're selling a partial for 27?
Correct.
Let me ask you a question. What would you pay for that note if it were a non-performing note?
27.
At least,
yeah.
Okay, so the only reason that they aren't comfortable with this now is that their yield compression is so low. They're buying it at such a modest yield, they just can't afford for anything that go wrong.
Well, they pay way too much, typically.
Okay. Well, then what they're doing is they're cherry picking, which is right. What that buyer is famous for. They give you a great price, and then 70% of the time they can't perform at the price they've given you. And then they pull out the knife and they cut you.
Right, or they just say no.
Okay. That's what frustrates me about that particular buyer is, you know, it's bullshit. They give a price that they can't perform on.
Yeah, you know the buyer. You know, we've discussed that.
Of course I know the buyer.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So the reality is it a good deal? Yes. May you have to go sell it somewhere else? Yes. May you have to give somebody a better return? Yes. And where did that money come out of? It comes out of the seller's pocket.
Right.
It don't come out of your pocket. Don't reduce your commission.
Well, I'm not making enough on this as it is.
They created a substandard transaction. Okay?
Yep.
They don't have a loan app. They don't have the right kind of documentation. They don't have a form that says that we can call and verify information from the borrowers. When you sign an FHA loan, you sign that crap. When you go to the bank and sign a loan, you sign documents that say they may ask for future information and you're willing to provide it. Okay?
Right.
So the seller created a substandard product, and if the price has got to get cut to make that happen, that's their problem. The guy sitting right up here on the video with me, he might buy that note.
Okay.
Now, we're not going to buy it at the same yield that the, quote, institutional investors are buying it, but guess what? They ain't buying it.
Right. Okay.
So we're not saying that the borrower interview, that in of itself, is not an industry standard. It is an industry standard. We're just saying there's an art form of part of doing this business that I think they probably missed.
What would be the art form? In other words, you know, you just ramble on question after question, you'll probably freak out the payer. I'm sure you interact, put some personality into it, or what would you suggest?
All right. Well, let's just go through a little bit. Now, I can't speak in Spanish. Okay.
Oh, come on, Eddie.
Come on. You
come on, Eddie.
Just saying. Well, I mean, you told me these people are Mexican nationals, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So understand if some guy like me calls them and I know, you know, 8 Spanish words and 4 of them are mispronounced, that ain't probably going to be effective. So I got to have the right person on the phone with them. And the thing that I would do, if you were that payer, I would say, Dave, we are working with Mr. Mangan, and he wants to be able to sell his loan because he can't wait for all the payments out in the future. Now, let me tell you how that affects you. And if it affects you only in the sense that you mail your payments to another address. The law says we cannot in any way change the terms of your deal that you've already agreed to with Mr. Mangan. Are you clear about that?
Yes, I am.
You understand what that means? In other words, that says that the interest rate and your monthly payment and what you owe cannot change.
Okay.
But Mr. Mangan has the right to sell the note because he needs to get to his money, and he was kind enough to offer being the bank for you, but obviously he needs to be able to move on. And so we fill that gap, and we buy Mr. Mangan's right to receive those payments in the future. You'll be paying us, not Mr. Mangan. Does that make sense to you?
Totally.
Are you happy with the house? Is everything going the way you thought?
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to do some fix-up, but it's good. I bought it because I liked it and I could afford it.
You're nothing's different about your job situation than when you bought it. You're still comfortable making your payments because we want to make sure that we're looking to buy a loan that you're going to be absolutely successful paying back. We we want you to be able to own this house.
Good.
Do you see how I'm doing that?
Right.
I'm asking you the hard questions. I just didn't do it like some, you know, somebody that needs to go to Walmart and get a personality.
Right. Okay. So basically just weave it into a story, keep it simple, and you get the answers you want.
Yeah. Are you happy? Can you afford it? What's the deal? You know, have you done any improvements to it? We put a tree in the yard. We painted two rooms. Oh, really? You see what I'm saying? I mean, this is their home, right? So I would just say that I don't know how many payer interviews we've done, Charles, within our shop over the years, but.
Keep it simple, though. Like you said, you can tell a
story.
Yeah,
10 or 20,000 times, literally.
Yeah.
I'd say the times that we've had somebody hang up and wouldn't talk to us is a needle in a haystack. Way less than 1 out of 50. Maybe 1 out of 250.
Okay.
But once again, we do it in a way that it wasn't threatening. And we, you know, once again, if you have a Hispanic bar, you got to have somebody that speaks Spanish speaking to them. You can't have some person that can't communicate with them and make them feel comfortable.
And I have that for future transactions from my REO days. I've got that, so I'm good.
But it's not you. You're the broker. I mean, you're never going to be the guy making that interview. We're not gonna have you do the interview if we're buying the note. Neither is any other institutional investor.
Okay.
They're not going to do that. And right. If you got a private investor that's kind of your guy, and he's kind of nested up underneath you, that may be true. But if you're selling to a sophisticated buyer, they're going to do the interview.
I'm looking at the future, meaning using more of my private investors and take it down that way instead of going to this institutional buyer, which is getting challenging.
If I were buying this for my own account, or Charles is buying it for one of the family businesses that he oversees, we would do a payer interview. We just do it in a way that's not threatening.
Okay. Good deal. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, we'll see you in 3 weeks.
Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
Looking forward to it. All right, Matt, what's next? Very good question.
I'll go down to Keith. I was just looking at Lisa, who was wanting to hear your pronunciation of nachos.
Nachos. Okay, Lisa.
Yeah, you know I commit suicide socially all the time as it is. So I don't need any help with that.
I'm curious, how do you say nachos, Eddie?
I would, by the way, just so you guys know this, in my career of all the notes I've ever bought, I would say north of 70% of the time that my payer had a Hispanic surname. So this payer in this story that we were discussing with Dave is a more common instance than not. So no disrespect to a Hispanic bar. I'm just saying it's just normal in our business that we see that kind of thing.
And they have to be comfortable up front.
They do. And I'll be flat out honest with you. They have a reason. Life has taught them to be a little distrusting of some real estate investors. So you can't get mad at them, because I've seen a lot of, you know, not terribly sophisticated borrowers get screwed over by people that were trying to slicker them. So I have a sensitivity to just approach them in a way they respond correctly.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Keith. Is he with us,
Matt?
Happy New Year, my man.
Happy New Year. Can you hear me okay?
We can. How are you?
Okay, great. Things are going good.
Good.
Been working on a little partial note purchase for a couple months. Everything went wonderful. Got all the documentation after some struggles, and went to do a close, and come to find out we do not have an original of the note or the mortgage document. We have copies, but no original. So it kind of killed the transaction for the moment, because I wasn't comfortable without having an original.
What state is it in?
Alabama.
All right, Mr. Mangan.
So you don't have a – so the note, there's a copy of the note, correct, Keith?
That is correct. What I believe happened is the home buyer had their own representative attorney draft the document, and they talked the poor note seller into a 1% note for 30 years, no balloon. And what I suspect happened is they accidentally or on purpose gave the originals to the payer, the debtor. But we don't know it and can't prove it, so I'm just looking for solutions how to get an original document to feel comfortable.
Well, if you have a copy of the note, you can do a lost note affidavit.
Right.
And basically
do I have to
stipulate
have the payer to sign that?
No, yeah. the payer does not sign that. The note holder or the previous note owner that's selling the note would execute that lost note affidavit.
All right, so Keith, here's some thought process. Okay, the reason, and Charles and I I knew exactly where we were going to focus on the same thing, which is you start out with what state's it in. If it's in Texas or some statutory state, you got to produce the note to foreclose? No. Okay. If it's a judicial state like Alabama, you may have to produce the note to foreclose. Now let me tell you this. There is not a court in the land that will tell you that the fact that the note is lost makes the borrower's debt go away. It doesn't extinguish the debt. Okay.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
But it could be an additional legal process. And so now you're buying a brand new car with a little hail damage. You get the concept?
Oh, yeah. I felt comfortable with that, but just to feel more comfortable, I wanted either a lost note affidavit or if the payer is comfortable, maybe try to get them to re-sign it.
Well, what you said in describing this transaction, something that kind of raised our eyebrow, and that is you said that the payer is a lot more sophisticated than the seller, and that they got them to agree to an inordinately low interest rate.
Right. Well, I suspect the attorney suggested that. I'm not sure if the payer is sophisticated or not, but I know the attorney suggested that those terms.
And the mortgage is recorded, correct? The deed recorded?
Yeah, the mortgage and warranty deed are both recorded.
Okay.
The original mortgage is, to be honest with you, is probably pointless. Yeah. Okay. The original security agreement is probably not relevant at all. The original
it is recorded, right?
Now, that doesn't mean that at the hearing the judge doesn't say bring the original mortgage, okay? But you got a certified copy of the mortgage. Say, judge, here's what's file of record. You know, so the best analogy I can think of is you've got a car that runs good, but it's got some body damage. Okay, and depending on how cheap you're buying it, you're like, you may not care, or you may soften up the price. And part of softening up the price may be that you just say, look, based on this scenario, I need to see a pay history for at least 2 years. We're going to hold back, you know, $3,000, $5,000, something. And the reason I do is because you own the note and you can't produce the note. You're asking me to basically cash a check for you and you don't have a check.
Okay. Would you ever suggest trying to go to the note payer and re-sign it?
I've done that. I mean,
all I can say is no, I guess, right?
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Let's just play devil's advocate for 1 second. How sophisticated is this seller?
Absolutely zero sophistication.
All right. So in that case, I'm more comfortable. If I were dealing with a seller that was pretty dadgum sophisticated, what I might be worried about is he's borrowed money against this loan at the bank, and that's where the original note is at the bank.
Okay. And I feel that the 75-year-old widow got talked into a 30-year note.
I got
it. So she has been dealing with it for about 6 months, and she appears to be very, very unsophisticated.
We totally get that, and that's why I like these kind of scenarios that we're talking about tonight, is because part of it then you get to kind of apply the judgment to the business. It's not some rigid set of rules that always apply in every scenario. So I get it. The old lady either lost the note or, you know, and that's very common. I can't tell you how many notes I bought with a lost note affidavit, but I mean way in the thousands.
It's not tough to get, is it?
It's just a lost note affidavit. It's on the forms on in the membership site. You don't. I mean, we got one.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, my investment to value is like 16%, so I feel pretty comfortable about stuff.
It wouldn't stop us from buying it.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet. All right, let's see. Any other thing we need to cover on here, Matt?
I think we've caught up on our questions and nothing else on the board. So if you want to open it up to open mic, and then if we get anything, and that just sign off.
Well, I want to talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about where we're trying to go this year. And We're gonna spend a lot of time this year, kind of uncovering different areas. I know we have people like Keith or Dave, and they're, you know, trying to buy notes directly from individuals using the direct mail program. We got people buying portfolios. We got people working with investors. And so what I really want to do a lot this year is focus on, what that looks like, and just basically kind of the touch and the feel of the business. And to be honest with you, effectiveness of us doing it is based on you guys bringing good case studies. I mean, every case study we had tonight was really excellent. I mean, it was like to the heart of, do you do it, do you not do it? And that's the best way for Charles and I to really kind of guide you through what we do on these Monday night calls is just, you guys do a good job of describing the story and how it works. The 50-50 model, I'm probably spending 80% of my time right now on the 50-50 model. So I expect to really have some dramatic differences in case studies this year with you guys in that regard. And, this is kind of where I see us going this year. So, it doesn't mean that we won't do some stuff that we've done a lot last year, like just take apart and price it and look at it. But I want to get to the art. I want to spend a lot of time this year getting to the art of the deal, not just the mechanics of the deal. And, Charles, what do you see us focusing on this year?
Well, I mean, I think Eddie, we're looking at buying a lot more assets. We got a lot of over 200 assets in the pipeline right now. We want to focus on, moving more of those assets out to our students. I know there's a lot of people that are still at that point where they just haven't moved forward and started buying assets. And we want to get you to that point this year to buy these assets. And like I said, we've got more assets in the pipeline right now. Under due diligence that we'll be closing here in this first quarter of 2016. And, I think that, that's really what we want to focus is, these students taking that first step and buying more assets.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've discovered and the Titanium students that come to the office and do masterminds with us and stuff, we've really seen that with them. And obviously we think that's you know, that thread runs all the way through to a student at whatever level they're at in our mentor program. Paralysis of analysis is killing a lot of guys. I mean, they're just killing themselves analyzing a deal about something that we're just sitting there scratching our head going, come on. We buy imperfect notes, but that doesn't mean they won't pay. You know?
You got to get to that comfort level.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, what's the odds you're going to get a check? And that's everything in this business. You got to get down to, if you buy this note, if it's a performing note, right? If you buy this note, what's the odds they're going to pay? So, I think that's a critical thing. Our volume is, you know, going to significantly increase, and our success and our students' success is tied to us. You're being able to source assets from us. We're very confident the assets you buy from us overall are going to be better quality assets than we see other groups selling in the market. So we think that you're not exclusively necessarily going to buy from us, but if you're not buying from us probably the most, you probably need to relook it. We always tell people when they look at an asset, they're like, should I buy it? And we're like, look, we own the asset. We have to, there's some separation here. At the end of the day, we're at the same, I tell you what we'll do. Charles and I will always look at it and say we would buy it ourselves. That's the best we can do. All right, Matt, what else?
Not much, other than the classes coming up on the 22nd and 23rd out there in Phoenix, and then got one in Columbus.
Going to be in Phoenix 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and then we're going to be in Columbus, Ohio the next weekend. So, if that fits your travel schedule, Phoenix. You know, there's really, I mean, Columbus, Ohio, the end of January is like, weather's going to be pretty much, you know, perfect.
Cool. Perfect.
Feet of snow. You know what? We've done a lot of winter classes up there, and it snowed a little bit, but we've been lucky. I mean, it's people that live up there, they're used to it snowing. That's no big
deal. Right.
Yeah. All right. What else? Matt, did everything?
We got real quick, Eddie. We got a titanium, our first titanium of the year, Thursday, going out on Thursday. So our titanium members will have a release, and then it'll go out next Tuesday to the remaining students. I believe that's the 12th. So just keep your eye open. We'll send you out a notice that when it's released. And, just want to see everybody jump in there and buy some assets.
Got a big titanium visit at the office coming up.
Yep.
And we're gonna basically put them right in the middle of the due diligence that we're doing on these 200 assets, and we're gonna try to simulate it as close to what it looks like in our office every Monday as we can. So that'll be fun.
Yep.
Okay. John, I do see your question about collaterally assigning notes. It's just that's a deeper subject than I want to do tonight. But if you want to put a set of questions and details together, I'll be thrilled to cover it. I just don't want to be random with it.
Send it in to content@noteschool.com, and I'll put it together, and we'll get it on next Monday if you get some stuff together.
Yeah. Okay, Happy New Year, guys. Glad you're back with us, and we are looking for the best year, I believe, that we will have seen in the business. I'm expecting this year. I truly mean that. So I'd say if you're not buying, we got to get you buying, and if you're buying, we need to get you buying more, because this is the window of opportunity that we've been talking about. Good night.
Happy New Year, everybody.